C7. Number 12B.
Yes. Very typical, as I said, for this chapter is to show that here Mrs. Eddy has some renderings which are quite unique for that chapter, bringing out that mind is not only the principle of all, but also the condition of all, meaning that mind is also the universe of all, so that the universe is not something different than the whole of mind, but that the universe is actually the universe of mind. Therefore, everything is directed towards telling us, so don't be bothered about the physiological universe, the material universe, etc., because the real universe is also mind. She says, for instance, the divine mind includes all actions and volitions. You can see all actions. Well, all actions means all actions, not only the actions of the principle called mind. It means that the whole realm of action, the whole universe of action is mind. The whole realm of volition is mind. And naturally we can go on and could see that the whole universe of nature is spirit, and so on. So that we get the sense here that Immanuel that comes from God to us and says, I'm with you, is taking us a step further and says, therefore, that which you have within you determines the kind of experience you have, and that experience you have is again mind. It's not something else. Because mind can never be split up in parts. And this is an aspect of the infinite which I think if we analyze our human mind, we don't really culture enough. That we still think in wholes and parts and still feel, yes, oh yes, God, yes, he is mind. Yes, sure, I quite agree, he is mind. But the universe is something else. Even if the universe is good, but it's something else, it's not mind. Whatever that something else may be, but it's still mind. It's the mind is the source, but also the condition of all existence and the universe. In this way, I think we have found the key for what the chapter wants to bring out, that therefore looked out from the infinite one, one can see that the infinite one is that one which governs not only everything in truth, but governs also everything in the realm of belief. If truth would not be truth in the realm of belief, then the realm of belief would be its own realm, and therefore a realm besides the realm of truth, and we would have duality. Can you see that our old logic somehow stands in our way? That if we see there is truth, and therefore next to it and the opposite is error, and therefore we have duality, therefore we have a realm of truth, and the realm of error, or a realm of belief, and we have established the best dualistic sense we ever can establish. To reconcile that or correct that, one has to be very careful that we don't say, well, truth is error, and error is truth, and then the whole thing is resolved. That naturally is not the answer. But the answer is to see that there is a realm called truth, and truth governs and has dominion in the realm of truth, but it also has dominion in the realm of belief and in the realm of error, of so-called error. Therefore, the scripture note 2 says, He sent His word. Can you hear? The Christ, He sent His word. The Christ translation. He sent His word, and what happened? When the word comes to the so-called realm of belief, what happens is that truth dwells in the realm of belief, that truth rules in the realm of belief, and therefore, and healed them. The moment truth comes to the realm of belief, it's still the realm of truth, and the phenomena changes, and delivered them from their destruction. So, in the oneness of being, Mrs. Eddy would say, only through radical reliance on truth can scientific healing power be realized. Only through radical reliance that truth is omnipotent in the realm of truth and omnipotent in the realm of belief can really the oneness be realized. The moment we say, yes, truth is omnipotent in the realm of truth, and there is another power that is omnipotent in the realm of evil, we have established a duality. We have established it, because it doesn't exist. That's why we can say, truth is omnipotent in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. And out of that comes naturally the insight why it is that God can control man and body. This aspect has never been brought out in the textbook up to this point. Up to this point, you see, we never had that aspect. We think that's all over the place, that's there from the first page to the last page, but it isn't. As a big subject which would explain the control, here in physiology, it's really the first time that she takes that as a main subject and explains it. So the text is full of that control of the truth being omnipotent in the realm of belief. Namely, she speaks about God's control over man and body. Body is the realm of belief, the physiological belief. It's the control, even in the realm of belief and body, the control over body through mind, speaks about mind's mastery over sin, sickness, and death, over the universe, including man. Man in science is governed by divine mind, the divine mind's absolute control. Can you hear? Always that control. Do you hear how I read the textbook? See, if we only look out for sentences, if we are only interested in understanding individual sentences, then such a sentence may make sense to us, but it never really helps to see the whole structure of the textbook, of the whole subject. But if we consider it in its relationship to the whole, we say, where does Mrs. Eddy talk about mind's control over the universe, mind's control over the body, mind's control over man, mind's control over all conditions? Where does she show that? Where is that main aspect of the whole system brought out? And then suddenly we find out, it has a certain place value. She will not tell that in the chapter on prayer. She will not tell that, say, in the chapter on marriage. See, this is here. Again, she would say, in order to show that mind is the controller in both realms, always in truth and in error, she would say, God can do all things for us in sickness and in health. You see the both realms. In the positive realm of health and in the negative realm of sickness, God can do all things for us. Just says, for God, you know, for God there are not two realms. For God itself, in the oneness of being, there are not two realms, the realm of sickness and the realm of health, the realm of truth and the realm of error. That only exists when we take thought, when we take thought. When we eat of the tree of the fruit of good and evil, we make out of the tree of life a tree of good and evil. The tree of life is not dualistic. It is planted in the midst of the garden, and then afterwards in the midst of the garden, somewhere there must be two midst of the garden, was the tree of good and evil. Well, it's the same tree, but it's looked at from two different standpoints. So, yes, and then you can see also in this chapter, over and over, the same wording comes, which in the other chapters only occasionally appear. But here it recurs and recurs, to God all things are possible. To God all things are possible. Now if we consider what does it mean, can you translate that into the system? To translate it into the system, it shows this is the place value of the crisis Christianity. Yeah? Does your spiritual ear catch on this? To God, possible? Possible means the Christ. Possible what? All things. Christianity. So, in God, in the Word, is embedded what? That for God, the Christ possibility, the Christ impact, the Christ power, for the Christ power, for the Christ dominion, Christianity, all things are possible. The whole universe, the whole realm is under that Christ impact. So over and over we get here that to God all things are possible. To the law of Christ, the truth makes all things possible to spirit, he says. To the divine mind, to which all things are possible. Always that. Can you see the oneness? That says, in that oneness, we must see that God is not only the one and the only in the realm of the spiritual. He is the one and the only. No matter in which realm. Because the realm is not the realm that God makes. It takes no thought. We make the realms. We make the realm of error and distinguish it from the realm of truth. But for the one God, this distinction is not possible. Therefore, for God, all things are possible, no matter if the proposition is in the realm of health or in the realm of sickness. Yeah? So little by little, you know, this chapter yields really its treasure. We actually didn't yet state what our oneness is here. Let's take the matrix, the seventh chapter, physiology. Perhaps let's put that in here saying, God is omnipotent. God is omnipotent in the realm of truth. And in the realm of belief. God is omnipotent in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. Perhaps you say, and this quite rightly that you say perhaps, well, this hasn't a really clean, pure tone of oneness, because we take in the realm of truth and the realm of belief, which indicates two realms. It isn't very clean. Yeah, all right, yes, and yet I like it, because somehow it has a practical impact when one says, Yes, it is the same dominion, it's the same omnipotence. No matter, and now naturally we leave the stamp, but no matter if we make realm of truth and we make realm of belief. So it is not quite 100% pure, but it's, if we would put it purely, we would say, well, God is omnipotent. It's omnipotent. Huh? Omni means omni, everywhere. Huh? But it may not have the same impact on the student, because it says, oh yes, God is omnipotent, he thinks above. Thinks, yeah, he's omnipotent there up in heaven, wherever heaven is, you know. At noonday he's up there, and and at midnight he's down there. So, it is a good thing perhaps sometimes to make a concession to language, a concession to our understanding, and just spell it out that that omnipotence is an omnipotence in those two realms in which we believe humanly, the realm of truth and the realm of beliefs. If we take the counterfeit of it, again, I think there are various ways to express it. What seems to come up and up and up in the text, as I said, was always not to have two masters, not to have two omnipotencies. A master is that which has power, which masters, which seem to be the one that has all power within itself. So instead of saying not to have two omnipotencies, let's say, not to serve two masters. That's what he also says in the chapter. Not to serve two masters. That would be dualism. That dualism is brought out, as we said, that we feel that when we have to do something spiritually, we rely on spiritual principles, that when we have to do something materially, that we have to rely on material laws and principles. How could we state the law in this chapter? Let me state it from our oneness, that perhaps we say, God is omnipotent in the physical realm, and in the spiritual realm. God is omnipotent in the physical realm and in the spiritual realm. I have changed the order here a little bit for a purpose of elaborating it, and also because Mrs. Eddy first gives in the first part the physical realm, the physiological realm, and then in the second part of the chapter the spiritual realm, so I put first the physical realm and then the spiritual realm, and it's also much easier when we elaborate that law. And so let us elaborate that law and see what kind of dominion is expressed and what happens in the physical realm and what happens in the spiritual realm. So perhaps the best thing is you make two columns so that we can always, two columns, huh? And then elaborate the law. So the first column on your paper would be the physical realm, and the second column would be the spiritual realm. Then we would go through the seven subjects of the chapter. So you put then on the left-hand side an abbreviation for the synonymous term, mind, just a big M, huh? And now, what happens? when mind is omnipotent in the physical realm, what happens there? Mind is omnipotent in the physical realm, then mortal thought cannot reign. Mortal thought cannot reign, has no power. See, that's now the dominion that mind has in saying, if mind has all power, then mortal thought has no power, cannot reign in the physical. And what happens in the spiritual realm when mind has dominion? And here we have to be clear about the place value, or we choose the wrong ideas. Again, what is the place value? We have seen that truth is the only power that comes to the realm of belief. What does it do in the spiritual realm when mind comes to the spiritual realm, lifting us out of the physical realm? Well, we get the sense of let there be light, the sense of enlightenment, so that ignorance has no more power, has no more anything to say, and you get the sense that mind has dominion in the spiritual realm by bringing forth enlightenment, dawning of the right ideas. Can you see what happens? If mind is omnipotent in the realm of truth, then in the physical, mortal mind cannot have also power. Mortal mind can no more reign. What happens when mortal mind does no more reign? What comes out of it? That therefore more and more the divine mind reigns. Mortal mind no more reigning means that there is a dawning of ideas, that there is an enlightenment taking place. In other words, the way that mortal thought disappears, take no thought for your life, if that is dominated by mind, to take no more so much thought for your life, then we take more thought for the spiritual, and the spiritual begins to dawn. Yes? So you have the dawning of the ideas, the dawning of enlightenment, that takes place. Can you see, when does the dawning take place? The dawning can't take place if not beforehand. We have seen that mortal mind has no say in it anymore. That the divine mind is the only mind, and therefore the mortal mind has no say anymore. Take no thought of what you eat and drink and so on. Turn away from the problem. And by turning away from the problem, we free ourselves from mortal mind influence, from mortal mind information, and the light dawns. So we cannot have a dawning of ideas just by wishing them. And say, oh, I wish the light would break. I wish I would see something better. I wish I would have more inspiration. I wish that the light would break in. Yes, it will break in the moment we see that mortal mind has no more say in it. We come to spirit. What happens in the realm of the physical when spirit has dominion? Then, when spirit has dominion, we see that matter can be of no more help, that matter cannot help anymore, that matter is no more of any help. It loses its power to help, it loses its power to do something for us. So, matter can no more help us. What then can help us? You have in the spiritual realm that spiritual strength will help us. That is now the power that will help us, that we gain moral and spiritual might and strength. Again, can you see? We think, let's have more spiritual, moral might and strength so that we can resist anything. Where do you get it from? Where shall we get the strength from? Just by saying, I pull up my socks and I want to have more strength. You can't. You have first to see that the counterfeit, namely matter, has no power, that it cannot help. Only when we have wiped out that out of the oneness of being and say, in the oneness of being, matter has no possibility to help us and to be of any avail to us, only then we lose the trust and faith in matter. Huh? We lose the trust and faith in matter. Only then really we can feel that we have spiritual strength and have spiritual strength and can rely on the spiritual. Yes. Okay.